whole lot more with this kind of rage.
Renee Dupuy. So that's called The Witness from Medusa. This next one is, you know, they say sometimes what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. For many oppressed people, the message should be, please stop killing us. The song kind of speaks to that. Can't do this anymore. Keep pounding on a bolted door till our fists bleed. Can't read what's in your eyes. Can there be another compromise when all we left to sacrifice is everything we need? Thought I understood what we had to do. Thought we were good with what we knew. Learning to drown. How are we keeping score? Waging someone else's war with the weapons we both swore we'd never use. You say I'm losing faith, but who laid this world to waste? How does that victory taste? Is it better to lose? 'Cause we begin like every fool, thinking we can win, playing by the rules. The deeper we dive in, the faster we go down. While learning to drown, learning to drown.
I don't want to know what's real. Feeling, let me slip into your deathless night. Follow the fire, follow the flame, follow desire.
Hey, everybody. We are What Time Is It, Mr. Fox? That was Rene Dupuis on vocals. We're singing some songs from Medusa, Reclaiming the Myth, which is a thing we wrote, and it's going to be at the Planetarium, at the Museum of Science, Charles Hayden Planetarium, June 27, July 25, August 22nd. It is a reclaiming of the Medusa myth. It's about time.
Have we mentioned yet who actually wrote this?
No.
Oh, let's not do that.
Definitely not.
It's a secret.
Dream Child of Brian King, everybody. Here on guitar and vocals.
Everyone's applauding at home, listening to the radio right now.
So this next song is called He Was a Cloud, and I want to dedicate it to the voice of Medusa. It's Chloe Erdman, Elizabeth Chloe Erdman, goes by Chloe, who is in Crete right now, in some ancient caves, speaking of Greek mythology. And she's the one who heard this song coming out of my iPod in my car and said, "Hey, dude, this should be in Medusa." So it is.
He was a cloud, he was a cloud, he was a cloud magnet,
he was a cloud magnet,
soft and dangerous, pure and dangerous.
He was a cloud magnet,
soft and dangerous, soft and dangerous, soft and dangerous, pure and dangerous. Here comes licorice, wax some slithers, wax some dithers, gold sun dripping, gold sun dripping, gold sun dripping, gold sun dripping.
I leave tomorrow with spoiled, I leave God sweet, spoiled God sweet,
Dionysus, Dionysus, Dionysus. He was a cloud, he was a cloud, he was a cloud, soft and dangerous, soft and dangerous, soft and dangerous. He was a cloud magnet, he was a cloud magnet. Here comes Icarus, wax some feathers, wax some feathers, gold sun dripping, gold sun dripping, gold sun dripping.
Soft and dangerous, soft and dangerous, soft and dangerous.
So we have a couple more songs from Medusa. We got Joe Cardoza on the bass, Dennis Monocle on drums, Nathan Cohen on fiddle and trumpet and banjo.
Uh-oh.
We'll bring that out later. Keep your fingers crossed. Rene Dupuis on vocals and keys and melodica, and I'm Brian King on guitar and vocals and keys. And this is a song that Nathan wrote called Fly Away.
If you could fly away from this brittle shell that holds you, your mama always told you this was home. If you could sail beyond the edges of the ocean, where would you have the notion to roam? Can we outlast the spell that has been cast? Will the story of their past become our own? The world where the wind was born was all.
Where would you watch the dawn when it breaks? And if you find the strength to leave, will you forget to grieve and breathe the breath you've been afraid to take? And when you feel you're free, who exactly will you be? Is the mask you wear what gives you shame?
The world where was always empty and dark. Prometheus, he flew to the sun and flew to the single spark.
And when Pandora turned the key to open up the box, amid the plagues of misery, she learned what hope unlocks.
Before the wind was here, another voice appeared. Now I am the heir of hope and despair, tender but also severe. From these brittle shells that hold you, Mama always told you this was home.
All right, dudes, and everybody else, which is everyone.
Don't forget to do that.
Well,
and everything in between.
Considering that Medusa is a lot about gender and how we wear that, we're going to end with a song that's a little bit about rage and fire being fuel for change, we hope. Thanks for having us. Thanks for... Joel on sound and inviting us here. Yeah. It's always such a pleasure. And thank you, WMFO, and everyone listening out there. The song's called On Fire.
On fire, everybody's on fire. If there's any concern. tried to hide the smoldering, but why pretend at all? It always felt so cruel. Been carrying the torch so long, it's time to let it fall.
Thank you so much, WMFO.
What time is it, Mr. Fox?
Have a lucky day. Players win and win. let us play, yeah. Have a lucky day. Have a lucky day. Have a lucky day.
You're listening to On the Town with Mikey D, 91.5 FM WMFO in Medford. And it is, what time is it, Mr. Fox O'Clock at, at WMFO here in the studio.
It's
welcome.
Nice to be here. Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
Yeah, it's good to be back.
Wonderful to be here. I was just saying to Andrew, the last time I was here talking, it was in the middle of a snowstorm. I'm so happy that it's not snowing.
We had a wonderful give it night. Half an hour. It's New England.
I know. We had a wonderful hour. Night that night.
Yeah. So snow at this time of day would be just really weird.
But it is New England, as Nathan said.
So,
there I am. Hi,
yes.
Everybody.
I fixed it.
Thank you. So. It was really fun playing in the other room, and we're still working out these new songs. So they were kind of they're coming to life for this show Medusa that we're doing next week, and one of the songs was written by Nathan, and I helped, and then Nathan started writing a song, and I helped with that, and then I've written some songs. Renee wrote the song Ghost that we just performed. And that wasn't written for Medusa, but it works perfectly. What was your inspiration for that, Renee?
Like, for Ghost, Ghost was mostly, you know, about things that you want to forget, I guess, and a past experience that I think, you know, informed that. The right. idea of like wanting to see a ghost, but then not wanting to see a particular ghost, a living ghost, really, you know, yeah. a particular person.
It was, it's just, there's this beautiful moment in the show. We don't want to give too much away, but there's hand-drawn animation by Ruth Langford that goes to that song, and you're in the dome at the planetarium, so it's flying around the room in 360, and we were there last night doing our tech, and we're getting dizzy because we were trying to play
dizzy in a good way.
Yeah, yeah. It was dizzy, but like it was dizzying.
There we go.
Yeah, like that was beautiful.
This has been an exciting process. Brian said he didn't want to give too much away. We can give a little bit more away just in terms of what the show is. I think a lot of people say, right, you're doing Medusa at the Planetarium, what is it? And then we sort of explain the right, but what is it? So, Brian, do you want to describe? I guess it's my job. I brought it up, but I'm passing the ball.
Andrew was just mentioning that, like, some of our friends perform in the planetarium all the time, like Walter Sickert and the Army of Broken Toys, Jaggery, with Molly Sastry, Mary Beechner just did a beautiful show there, Ruby Rose Fox. And James Witzel, who's the director, co-director, and producer of the night programming, we met him at Oberon. We used to do shows there, and so he invited us to do something. And after going to those gorgeous shows, which Joel, who is here, does a lot of the sound for, and it's just a beautiful space to hear music and be kind of lost in their visuals. After going to those shows, I was thinking this play that we were writing about Medusa, wonderful icon, snake-headed goddess, really, of rage and transformation, would suit the dome, because we have animators that we've worked with in the past, and we could really tell a story and also use music. So it's sort of a play, like with radio, dialogue, so you hear the actors. We have actors from New York and Rhode Island, New Hampshire, all over the place.
Gloucester,
Massachusetts. Some of the band members have voices. And so we recorded that at Tony Goddess's studio in Gloucester with Warren Babson. And then brought in the animators, and we have the music. And it's kind of like it's play, musical, concert, psychedelic 360 experience.
One of the things that it's Nathan again over here. And that was Brian. Okay. One of the things that I find really compelling about the show is that, like Brian mentioned, Renee's song Ghost wasn't written specifically for the show, but it resonated with this moment. And one of the things I think is exciting is that the music can exist for the show or completely outside of the show. Unlike a modern musical where the music kind of propels the narrative, here the narrative exists on its own, and then the music is sort of like in the style of a Greek chorus where we step back and have a moment of reflection about it, but it's hopefully music that people can enter into from lots of different places, so you sort of get what you need to get, or what there's a lot of different access points to the story.
Andrew, have you ever seen Clash of the Titans?
No.
What is up? I don't know. How old are you? Do you want to say that on air?
I'm 17.
Are we allowed to watch it right now?
I would love that. I mean, Joel's never seen it either. He was like, I think I love it, but I'd never seen it. Has anyone at this table seen Clash of the Titans aside from me?
Formative experience.
I have seen it, yeah.
Okay.
The owl was my favorite.
Oh, the mechanic, Bobo, or Boo Boo.
Yeah.
So basically, when somebody sees this show, it's going to be just like they've never seen Clash of the Titans.
Well, if they have seen Clash of the Titans, it's like it's the other side of Clash of the Titans. In the way that anyone who's read the book Wicked, you know the Wizard of Oz story. Well, here's the real story. The same with Mists of Avalon, which is about the Arthurian myth, the Round Table. It's told from the point of view of the women. And this story is about that as well. I mean, Medusa in the traditional myth is a monster, a woman who's turned into a monster after a sexual assault as a victim blaming. And then later on in her life, this guy, Perseus, the hero, comes and cuts her head off. You know, because that's what you do when you're a guy looking for adventure. Let's go cut this woman's head off. Mm. So we found some problems with that original story. So
needed some tweaks.
Yeah, needed some modern tweaks. And, you know, there's a deeper story there. So I went to Greece and Crete with my friend Chloe, who ended up being the voice of Medusa, actually, in the show. And we explored all these different caves, and she took me to ancient ruins and museums, and I found a very different Medusa there. One that's came before the story that we know. That story was probably an intentional subversion of an earlier story in which Medusa is more powerful and more revered. What do you guys think of the planetarium last night?
Personally, this is Dennis, the drummer, and I thought it was absolutely stunning. Like you were saying, it was dizzying. You know, I felt myself almost falling back off my stool when I was playing these songs and just looking. I mean, it was to be in that space again. Anyway, I think, you know, Renee were mentioning how it's so fun to be in there because it's been so long since we were children, you know, that we've experienced something like this. Some of us have been there as adults maybe to see a laser show, but which are fun, but to be immersed in such something that people we know have created and that we've helped create is kind of magical. I felt a few goosebump moments last night for sure.
Yeah, it's a crazy space. And I think a lot of people, when they think of Museum of Science, think, you know, kids. And James Witzel and the staff there have been making all this night programming, which we talked about, like rock shows, drag shows. So it's kind of reclaiming the space in a new way.
It's very cool.
Yeah. What was your experience of the Jaggery show?
I thought it was mind-blowing, the visuals and just seeing them, who I've seen many times in a completely different context, where it was harder to kind of see the musicians, so it made you focus more on the visuals and just kind of go off in some sort of dreamland.
Yeah, in some
but,
ways,
but still be right there.
Yeah, in some ways, it's like the way we used to listen to music, like on vinyl. Maybe some people still do, where you would just like listen to an album with a bunch of people and just kind of stare into space and just listen. And I feel like with the technology today and the distractions, we don't often get that opportunity just to kind of really listen and not be like screaming and jumping up and grabbing your phone and taking pictures and doing what we do now at concerts. We actually just all lie back and like experience this music. So it's a, they're doing a good service, I think, for the modern era and music lovers.
I still listen to music that way.
You're amazing. Thank you for doing that.
When I turn 18, I'll probably stop.
And then you get a real job and, you know.
Sell out.
Brian, what are the dates of the show and are tickets available and things like that?
Oh, that's really a smart thing. The dates are, the premiere is June 27th, which is next Thursday, and we're going to do a reception after with the actors so you can meet all the gods. And there'll be, you know, wine and stuff like that. And then the next show is July 25th and followed by August 22nd. So it's the fourth Thursday of every month at 7:30. And for tickets, you can go to mos.org/adults because it's adult content.
I've also found if you're lazy, you can just Google Medusa Museum of Science or something like that, and you'll come right to...
What's Google? There's always, what time is it, Mr. Fox?
Oh, right. Who is that? That sounds familiar, but I can never keep that whole band name in my head because it's so long with all that punctuation.
So much punctuation.
Yeah. Did we name our band that?
That's crazy.
If I remember correctly, you have to go there and get the ticket even if you like ordered it online. So you won't be able to just like print your ticket and then show up like 15 minutes late. You have to get there like and line up and stuff.
I don't know. I don't remember the actual logistics of it.
Yeah, they do a very good job to make sure that everybody's there and then everybody goes in, because the performance is something you don't want to really have interrupted by people just like staggering in.
Sure.
Yeah. So basically people want to show up like earlier than you would for like a rock show.
Sure. Yeah. You're not just kind of like wander in, because it will let all this light in and kind of ruin the experience for everybody. So
you also get to wait in the Museum of Science,
which is pretty cool.
Awesome.
Yeah. Tough for you.
That's pretty awesome. One thing that's different about this show is that in the past, What Time Is Mr. Fox has mostly been songs that I've written, and there's been a lot more collaboration on this show. And also, like, Renee and I pretty much split the vocals, which has been awesome. It's been really fun to hear you sing these songs and
likewise,
some harmonies and all that. It's been really fun.
Yeah, it's gonna be great.
Yeah, it was really cool just hearing you guys perform that, and like you already have like a completely original approach to the voice as a you know, as somebody from mostly the pop music realm, and then you have somebody else who's also very original and unique to like kind of play off each other.
Yeah, thank you. I love singing with Renee.
Yeah, me too.
The harmonies are fun. Yeah. We're like, we did this song Drown, we played, and like it's one of my favorite things in the world to sing that chorus with you. So
like both of you guys have this kind of like timeless sound because you've brought in so many influences, kind of like Ruby Rose Fox is like that too, where like music wise it could be like 20 years ago. But, you know, production-wise, it's like, wow, you know.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for saying that. And then we just introduced the banjo, too, which is kind of a new thing for us. Nathan's been playing around with that.
I think this band has been a little resistant to the banjo. At least Brian has. I kept suggesting it, and Brian kept saying,
I would just change the subject.
It just sounds so much like the banjo. I'm banjo obsessed right now. I'm deep in it, and then I forced everybody to listen to this tune with banjo on it, and they begrudgingly, like, yeah, that song might need banjo.
I do that to Nathan a lot, though. I'll be like, you know, can you make your violin sound like a synthesizer, or you know, and whatnot. So we're always trying to.
You know, I'm in therapy about that, right? Can't you just love me for who I am?
Well, someday. I think I got my own issues.
A lot of people kind of stereotype the banjo because of kind of genres of music it's mostly associated with, like bluegrass. But really, it's the instrument of African origin, and very very similar to the instruments that the Moroccan guys like Club Delf, they play those instruments. Basically just a skin and then strings as the instrument.
Yep. I think there's something really on the banjo style that I've fallen into is clawhammer, which is a little bit older than the bluegrass style, but I think there's something really honest about it. And it also has this drone thing happening, which just I don't quite understand yet, but sound comes out of it and I love it. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of a meditation. There's also a whole thing I feel like every banjo player needs to meditate on, a little bit of the appropriation problem with it, but that's for a different radio show. But I love how it sounds.
Well, like banjo players I know of, they just tend to like really revere the people they're ripping off, so that they're conscientious about it.
Yeah.
No, it's an instrument with a lot of history.
Ripping off being like how other people say, oh, that I'm influenced by blah 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 blah. Yeah.
Right. There's an artist, and her name is escaping me right now, who spoke about the difference between, you know, that she was saying there really isn't cultural appropriation. There is expansion or stealing. Like, it's literally stealing when you're taking away, you know, someone's work, you know, and their ability to make money, or their culture's ability to be seen and heard, and you become the dominant voice, and then that one becomes, you know, like when, like, a company takes, they say, a Native American design and then mass produces it, and that, you know, the tribe where it originated from or the original artists don't get any compensation for it. And it kind of takes the sacred out of it. That I call stealing, you know. But then there are other times when, you know, when people are honoring and are, you know, there's a conversation of expansion where, you know, other people are being inspired by music they might not have been exposed to, and everyone's on board. And that can be a really beautiful thing, I think.
Yeah, a guy I know who he plays the banjo and other instruments. He has this story about that dichotomy of like stealing and expanding. He says, so if this guy goes all the way down from the top of the mountain all the way down the bottom of the valley and gets some water and comes back up, and then if you like dip your ladle in the water when he gets and say, wow, my water is really good, then you're stealing. But if you go all the way down to the bottom, to the river, and make your own journey and come back, then you're doing something.
That's a great metaphor. I've never heard that story. Yeah, that makes sense. I'm going to meditate on that.
Didn't mean to blow your mind or
no,
anything.
I love it.
Deep in thought over there.
You rendered us all speechless with that.
But I mean, I love thinking about these things. So I think it's important, yeah, you know, to understand. I mean, I think on one level, all art is derivative. All language is derivative. I mean, it's, you know, I have a friend who's a producer in New Orleans who once told me that after Katrina, there was much music lost because every neighborhood had its own sound. And that,
yeah, you know, and their whole neighborhoods are gone.
Right. And you would, you know, he was saying from neighborhood to neighborhood, there would be distinctions that maybe you know, the sort of casual listener wouldn't hear, but a lot of people knew, like, this originated here, or they took something from next door and changed it. And so, I mean, all music is derivative. You can't avoid it. But I think it can be done mindfully and collaboratively, as opposed to being like, hey, I heard this thing, and now I'm going to make, like, you know, like Madonna did that with Vogue. You know, she's obviously saw Paris is Burning, the documentary about voguing people of color, queer people of color, who were feeling oppressed and experiencing oppression, and then responding to it by, like, creating this amazing art. And then she was like, hey, that's cool, I'm gonna now do that. And, like, didn't, I mean, she hired a bunch of those dancers, which was maybe a good thing, but it wasn't like in every interview she was saying, hey, like, I was really inspired by this, these people, and I want to talk about their story, it was, and bring them to the forefront. It was just like, no, let's make a dance craze that no one has any connection, doesn't know any connection to what came before and where
right.
it came from.
Right.
Brian, speaking of appropriation and sensitive approaches, you just wrote a musical about a female experience as a male. How did you go about being sensitive to that?
Well, I think I've been answering it twofold, that question, because it's come up a couple times. And one is that as a queer person, I feel like I'm a orphan of the patriarchy, because I haven't been allowed to play. I'm quite aware of, you know, my male privilege, but, and also, you know, women friends of mine have talked about, like, roles that they feel like they've been shoehorned in because of patriarchy, and how Medusa is so important to them. And there's sexual assault in Medusa. So there's, you know, I feel like where we are with the Me Too movement has been coinciding with the gestation of this play. And so as an orphan of patriarchy, I kind of feel like an observer, but also growing up, all of my idols were women, and very strong and powerful women, because I feel like I was always being accused of being feminine and sort of beaten down for that. And so I think, of course, I was drawn to these women who could take care of themselves, defend themselves. And I thought they were, like, that's who I wanted to be. So I feel like that's come into the play. But in other ways, Eileen Little, Nathan's wife, is the director. All the actors, the animators, that are women, have been such a huge part of this. And obviously Renee's voice has been, it's like you're possessed when you're singing, I feel, so.
I love singing those songs too. The Witness is like an anthem. It's become like, it's like, I feel like it kind of takes over me when I sing it, you know? And so thank you for writing that, and, you know.
Thanks for giving it voice.
Having me sing it. It's an honor.
And we have Mr. Dennis is also Apollo.
It's true. Yeah. I got to get my god on. Also an honor. That was fun.
We had a lot of fun in the studio. It was it was right around, I think, about the time I came here, actually, the last time it was snowing. And we got all these actors from all over the place. And my favorite moments were, there were some really bittersweet moments and beautiful moments. Because, you know, it's a funny show and it's also a dramatic show. But when Dennis and Poseidon and Athena and Aphrodite and all those people were in the studio together, it was hilarious.
Oh my god, we were just acting like boobs.
Like, so I hope that comes across in the show. It's so funny.
Yeah, unlike royalty, gods are allowed to be human, actually.
That's what I love about Greek mythology. They are so human-like, but at the same time, they're a great allegory for the 1%. You know, they're like, we can just do whatever we want, and look at that, we can just screw with people's lives, and that's hilarious.
but they wear less Nantucket Reds and the Mount Olympus, less Madras plaid.
Well,
patchwork.
We kind of wrote Apollo to be kind of a surfer dude.
Mm, totally.
And a little bit of a Trustafarian.
That's interesting because you got a lot of that kind of stuff in New England. So it's like, in a way, you're kind of bringing in some New England culture into it a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. I think we see the extremes of privilege and poverty here more than people would know from the outside. I think people think, you know, Massachusetts is rich and educated and all of that. And there is that. And there's also a lot of people struggling. So mm-hmm. That's in the show as well. And the little nods to that kind of stuff.
All right. Thanks a lot. What time is it, Mr. Fox? And it's time to play some Peter Moore.
Oh, I love Peter.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Lobby is bare, except for one chair or one flight of stairs. I'm the first door down. Yeah, maybe we'll go out to a show. There always is so much to do downtown. I already want you. Yeah, your smile seems so kind. Yeah, your move is so fine. So I ain't wasting no time. I'm dropping trout. I'm dropping chow for you, baby.
I love you.
I'm dropping chow.
Dropping chow.
I'm dropping chow for you, baby.
It means I love you.
Oh, 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 oh.
I, yeah.
I wanna be seen with you as my queen. It's nearly obscene how you turn me on. You indoors, I'll bake you some more. I'll wait till you snore at the crack of dawn.
I'm thinking I love you, you're so cute in the snow. And if you need it slow, I should first let you know.
I'm dropping trial.
I'm dropping trial.
I'm dropping trial for you, baby. I'm dropping trial.
I'm dropping trial.
Dropping trial for you, baby.
The need for blood is constant. Your single blood donation to the American Red Cross can help save up to 3 lives. Be a hero. Donate blood. Visit redcrossblood.org to schedule your appointment.
special tone.